One of the functions of a meeting with such a man or woman is to force these inhibiting but semi-conscious feelings into the open. Without the conscious effort of facing them, the alchemical process in which the dross, that's the bad juju, is burnt away cannot take place. This is part of the preparation for death. The death of the old self, the price that has to be paid, the destruction of self-centeredness. When the old self dies like an old potato, the subtle organs can bud. The impact and consequence of such a meeting is one of the implications of the statement. It is the function which creates the organ. I stand by the door. I neither go too far in nor stay too far out. The door is the most important door in the world. It is the door through which men walk when they find God. There is no use my going way inside and staying there when so many are still outside and they as much as I crave to know where the door is. And all that so many ever find is only the wall where the door ought to be. They creep along the wall like blind men with outstretched groping hands feeling for a door, knowing there must be a door, yet they never find it. So I stand by the door. The most tremendous thing in the world is for men to find that door, the door to God. The most important thing that any man can do is to take hold of one of those blind, groping hands and put it on the latch that only clicks and opens to the man's own touch. Men die outside the door, as starving beggars die on cold nights in cruel cities in the dead of winter, die for want of what is within their grasp. They live on the other side of it. They live because they have not found it. Nothing else matters compared to helping them find it and open it and walk in and find him. So I stand by the door. Go in, great saints, go all the way in. Go way down into the cavernous cellars and way up into the spacious attics. It is a vast, roomy house, this house where God is. Go into the deepest of hidden casements, of withdrawal, of silence, of sainthood. Some must inhabit those inner rooms and know the depths and heights of God and call outside to the rest of us how wonderful it is. Sometimes I take a deeper look in, sometimes I venture a little farther, but my place seems closer to the opening, so I stand by the door. There is another reason why I stand there. Some people get partway in and become afraid, lest God in the zeal of his house devour them, for God is so very great and asks all of us, and these people feel a cosmic claustrophobia and they want to get out. Let me out, they cry. And the people way inside only terrify them more. Somebody must stand by the door to tell them that they are spoiled. For the old life, they have seen too much. One taste of God and nothing but God will do any more. Somebody must be watching for the frightened who seek to sneak out just where they came in, to tell them how much better it is inside. The people too far in do not see how near these are to leaving, preoccupied with the wonder of it all. Somebody must watch for those who have entered the door, but would like to run away. So for them, too, I stand by the door. I admire the people who go all the way in, but I wish they would not forget how it was before they got in. Then they would be able to help the people who have not yet even found the door, or the people who want to run away again from God. You can go in too deeply and stay in too long and forget the people outside the door. As for me, I shall take my old accustomed place near enough to God to hear him and to know he is there, but not so far from men as to not hear them and remember they are there too. Where? Outside the door. Thousands of them, millions of them. But more important for me and you, one of them, two of them, 10 of them, whose hands I am intended to put on the latch. So I shall stand by the door and wait for those who seek it. I'd rather be a doorkeeper, so I stand by the door. You have a message. You have your story. You have been walked to the gates of insanity and almost death, and you've been brought back to tell a story. You have a contribution to make to this existence, and only you can make it. And I think life is about finding out what that contribution is. So you have a decision to make. I was born on October 12th, 1976. My tombstone will say that is my birthday, and then it's going to have an expiration date, and it's going to have this little dash. I think mine should have two dashes. It should have October 12th, 1976, November 5th, 2007. And then whenever my expiration date is, because I was reborn on that date. Mark used to say, "What are you doing with your dash? What are you doing with your dash?" For us to do a weekend like this and sit up here, there has to be receivers in this audience. Now, Brandon and I have done quite a few of these. This has been one of my favorite experiences when it comes to the reception, because we can sit up here and communicate all day long, but this is like a two-way street here. Communication is always two-way. And I want to thank all of you this weekend for receiving. I can feel it. I sense it. And I hope it's given you something to ponder as you walk away from here. Because there are decisions to be made. You know, it's this program has given me a life beyond my wildest imagination. If you had told me 2 years ago that I would be living in Birmingham, in a relationship with this amazing woman, you know, I have these two boys that I have to influence, working in logistics, I would have said, no way. And it's one of those things, like, 2 years ago, none of this was on the radar, but I mean, when you sign up for this job, which is the spiritual basis of life, possibilities are endless, and you sort of just can go with the flow. I would have bet all my assets 2 years ago that I'd never leave Atlanta, Georgia. I would have bet them all. But God brought me here. I have little say in my life. Our culture says we do. I beg to differ. But I will tell you, one of the most powerful things I've heard recently was my sponsor on a speaker meeting on Zoom. It was like a year and a half ago, maybe. Maybe I don't remember when I first heard him say this, but damn it if it wasn't like, it was like he pierced the heart so gently, like a knife cutting warm butter. He says, "Don't let the life AA gave you get in the way of your AA life." I'm a firm believer that my spiritual bread every day is appointed for me. There's not a day goes by that I don't have exactly what I need to get through that day. So the days of Tarek trying to increase or augment his spiritual bread are long gone. It's about walking through life and trying to address each moment as it arises. And we're in spiritual warfare with the ego. And the ego is my word for the devil. I was overhearing a conversation Brandon and Ben were having. The ego is the devil. It's that negative, evil force in the universe as far as I'm concerned. I have a debt that has to get paid, and I'm the only one that can pay that debt, and that debt is to God. And the way I have attempted the repayment of that debt is to go through life and make amends with every person I am consciously aware of that I've harmed. Last year, I took a job that brought me to Birmingham. It was with a man I used to sponsor, and we would consider ourselves friends, and everything fell apart, and we did not see eye to eye, and the relationship ended, and I left. And I was furious, and I was angry, and I wrote this inventory, and I fist-stepped it. I can't tell you how many 10-step calls this guy had to field. And I could not. Like, I could see the mistakes I made. I could see where I was at fault, but I could not walk across the bridge from the third column to the fourth column. I was not compassionate, and I was not forgiving. And I told this guy right here, I'm never making that fucking amends. 3 months ago, I was invited to speak at a conference up in Knoxville, Tennessee. And when I go to conferences, I'd like to attend all the speakers. And so on Saturday, I was attending these two women who, one was from Florida and the other one was from somewhere else in Tennessee. And these women just touched my heart. And they were talking about these amends. And I'm sitting there and I'd been using prayer. I prayed for this individual. I prayed for his happiness, his prosperity, that he receives everything that I want for myself. I prayed for the willingness to make the amends, for my heart to open up. And like I would pray for like 7 days, a week, 10 days, and then it would go away. Then it would come back, and I'd have conversations with my sponsor. But for whatever reason, I was available when I was sitting in the audience at that conference. And I made, like, it was the intuitive thought. And I made the approach the following week. We had some schedule conflicts, and then I met with them about 2 months ago, and we sat down. And I was able to own all of my mistakes and all of my faults. And I walked away from that interaction freer than I was when I sat down for it. This is how I repay the debt. The greatest gift God has given me is my recovery. And what I do with my recovery is my gift to God. I try not to forget that. This is the way I attempt to live my life. And sponsorship is how I witness the regenerative power of God. I remember Brandon that day at the monastery. There's another kid, Brandon, that I've sponsored. I've sponsored him just a little bit longer than this guy. And I know the night I met that kid at the treatment center in my big book study. And when I see that young man now, my awareness is moved to God. Because nothing explains the transformation. You know? I have had the opportunity to work with a lot of men. A lot of them are sitting in this room that I care about very much. And I've gotten to watch the transformation of another guy who came to me at the beginning of the pandemic. We did all our step work on Zoom, you know, and this young man, you know, his life, March of 2020 and December of 2021, the only thing that explains the movement from that point to this point is he's tapped an unsuspecting inner resource. And I just got, all I showed up to do is I did what was done with me, and I carried the message to him, and he took the actions, and he had the experience. But for me, I've witnessed a transformation. I've grown spiritually because I see the possibility inherent in our program. Now, these 12 steps are free. But they do have a price. And it's not money. They're a massive, massive commitment. But the moment I accept it, the effect is electric, and I know my problem has been solved. I want to thank you so much for being here this weekend. And I hope we see each other again as we trudge the road of happy destiny. Thank you.
We buried him yesterday. The county coroner had published the required notices for the next of kin. No one claimed the body. It was just myself and his sponsor. Not even a preacher. The county doesn't pay for those. Not much of a send-off, and not the one that David had asked for. A cheap coffin, a backhoe digging a hole, and that was it. Another old AA gone. He had been sober over 20 years, and in AA over 30, a stern and rigid man who tried to soften his edges and never could. He was a loner, an isolated man, at the edge of life's good things. He hung in there, and in the end, hung himself. I don't know why, I can't know. I know that there had been a diagnosis of senile dementia, And I know that the doctor had added cancer to the list. But I've seen AAs deal with such things before. I don't know why David decided he couldn't. It isn't the first time I've been through this in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've known several over the years that who just up and walked out of life's door one day. Sober, but not happy. Sober, but not at peace. Sober, but they died of alcoholism. Our disease does not need us to drink in order to kill us. I wish more folks knew that and appreciated it. Alcoholism is the only disease that is capable of fighting back, of taking care of itself, and of emerging in new places and in new forms when it isn't properly treated. That's because of the spiritual malady. Most people think this has something to do with prayer or with God. It doesn't. It has to do with us and our spirit, that force which animates, motivates, and propels us. As an alcoholic, my spirit is flawed. It is ill. My character or basic nature doesn't work right. At its root is a fundamental and irresolvable insecurity, a hole that can't ever be filled. It is an instinct run rampant and in desperate need of acceptance and love that cannot be met. It hurts. It fills one with fear. The selfishness and self-centeredness of the alcoholic lies here. We are totally preoccupied with what is going on with ourselves and on the inside. The slings and arrows of experience warped by this need drives us to the fringe, and the voices of the committee in our heads keeps us there. We are obsessed with ourselves. And from this condition of mind, the insanity of feeling gone haywire, we become self-medicators eventually. We discover alcohol or something else, and this quiets the voices and provides the relief that we've never been able to find in any other way. It isn't any wonder why we drink and drug the way we do. And some of us don't develop an addiction. In attempting to meet the crying demand of our spirit, we become ill. We develop other malformations of behavior and suffer in 100 different ways. God broke David's obsession to drink, but I don't think David ever truly understood his disease. I say this because I watched him struggle with those old unresolved issues in his heart for years. His rigidity, coldness, aloofness, isolation, and difficulty with other people were a reflection of the pain in his heart, of the disease of alcoholism gone deep inside and still active. Alcoholism didn't need David to drink in order to continue to try to kill him. And in the end, it succeeded. In the end, instead of self-abandoned, David abandoned hope and discovered a bitter end. Our recovery from alcoholism through the steps must be a threefold process. It is not one-dimensional. When we say in AA that we have a triangle, recovery, union, and service, we mean it. In working these steps, I clear a pathway for two purposes. First, to come into a group of human people and away from the fringe of society where I've spent most of my emotional life. Secondly, discovering belonging through service to people within the group. It is only this entire threefold process that heals. It is especially true for those of us who suffer from a spiritual malady to a great degree. Perhaps the 12th step says it best. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, recovery, we tried to carry this message to other alcoholics, service, and to practice these principles in all our affairs, unity. You see, I cannot hold back. I must continue to suffer that shyness, aloneness, that overwhelming sense of self in my affairs. I must get involved in a group of people to practice these principles in all my affairs. Only the total approach is healing. Anything less is little more than driving my disease deep. And if I do that, it will continue eating away, trying to destroy me. It destroyed David. This is a memorial to an old AA who gave it his best shot. And I think David ended up on the plus side. It wasn't his fault. He seemed to have been born that way. There were a lot of old ideas about self that David could never muster the willingness to let go of. He is at rest now. But it says somewhere that no matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. David cannot speak to his experience any longer. I am speaking in his memory. And I think that if David could talk to us today, he'd say, understand your disease thoroughly and work the complete program of recovery. Anonymous. So, we've got the short form of the steps, and we got the long form of the steps, which is contained in the first 164 pages plus the doctor's opinion. We'd like to learn about what that means. Come see me after the meeting. We have a short form of the traditions. One of them, short form of the traditions over here, the 12th one says, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. It kind of sounds like it's about anonymity or something like that, right? And people get really twisted in the understanding of it. If you really dive into the 12 and 12 and the history of AA, you really understand what anonymity means. But I'm just going to go here because this is where I want to go, or at least where I'm led to go. This is the long form of the 12th tradition. And finally, we of Alcoholics Anonymous believe that the principle of anonymity has an immense spiritual significance. It reminds us that we are to place principles before personalities, that we are to actually practice a genuine humility. This to the end of our great blessings may never spoil us, that we shall forever live in thankful contemplation of him who presides over us all. You see, because I think I understand the 12th tradition in a different way, is that the anonymity is important because I didn't do it. I didn't get sober. I did nothing. Like, literally, I did nothing in the experience other than observe it, right? This woman who I love that I committed to being with for the rest of my life kicks me out, right? I didn't pick that. It suggested that I have a problem with alcohol. I didn't even know that. I'm delivered to Alcoholics Anonymous and I have an experience with a fellowship that takes me to a place where I have a deeper understanding of this thing that is actually working in my life, right? So therefore, I'm anonymous because I didn't do it. That power, which is God, did it. And if I start to claim that I did something to get me here, I'm delusional again. And if I'm delusional again, I can slip back into the idea that I can actually do something to stay sober. But when I acknowledge, because the thing that I see so often is that people, they come, they get dry, they get clean, and they start to feel better, and they start to think that this job and this significant other and these things in their life, that they did it, right? And then the desire to actually work the steps and do something about it, they lose that fire, they lose that passion for continuing to seek. Right? So, the significance of today being Bill's sobriety date, it's fascinating to me because, like, we picked this weekend because it's the only weekend I had free from, like, the beginning of November until the end of the year. Okay? So we picked this weekend and we landed on Bill's sobriety date. Tarek and I do a workshop at a facility that we've been doing for the last 6 years, and we do it on Dr. Bob's sobriety date. We didn't do that. It just happened, just like this happened, right? And so it's like this, it's this fascinating realization of like, of the, call it coincidences, but it's really just this universe working in a way that's just fascinating, that you can observe and have fun with. So Dr. Bob gets sober June 10th, 1935. And he dies in 1950. Okay. So it's 15 years. 15 years. I went and did the math, and it's 175. I got the note in my book, but I didn't leave notes as to what the note means. So I think that they say that he sponsored over 5,000 men and women over the course of that time. And I think there were 175 months. So 175 months divided by 5,000, that means that Dr. Bob was sponsoring 28.57 people a month. So basically, taking somebody through the steps every day and taking a day off each month, right? What are you doing? You doing that? Because, I mean, like... all right, so back to how it works. We're going to go way back here. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed her path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not give themselves just a little bit to this simple program. Right? So, when I was drinking, I would usually have a couple tall boys on my way home from work, and then we had a beer fridge in the garage, and so I had this great thing where I would, you know, do something with the cans. I'd go to the beer fridge, I'd open the beer fridge, I'd pop open a beer, and right as I was opening the door to walk in the kitchen, I would take a sip, right? And then Sarah would say, "Have you been drinking?" And I'd say, "Yeah, I just opened it." Neat little plan, right? And then I would continue to drink over the course of the evening, maybe go disappear into the basement and fall asleep in the basement. Alarm goes off at some point in time, wake up, and feel like dog shit. Drink a whole pot of coffee, stop at the gas station on the way, hammer a couple Dr. Peppers to, you know, get right, maybe get a chicken biscuit on the way in, get to work, fire the computer up, try to, like, organize my head and everything, and probably somewhere around 10 o'clock after drinking another pot of coffee, I might actually fire this thing up to accomplish some work, right? So from 10 to 11:30, I'm pretty productive, but then like the stomach thing kind of goes, you know, like we gotta go to lunch. That might even happen at 11, but at 11:30, I start rounding people up. We go to lunch. I eat to try to settle the stomach, right? But then like after we eat, then I'm got the post-lunch coma going on, so I'm sluggish, and so maybe around 2 o'clock, fire the thing back up and get a little more work done. And now 3:30 fires up, and it's like, ooh, man, you know what I really would like? I'd like another couple drinks to kind of get going. And so start obsessing, and probably about 4:15, it's kind of starting to get unreasonable. And so, like, okay, start packing my bag and everything. Maybe 4:45 slip out, because it's close enough to 5, right? Stop at the gas station on the way home, get my two tall boys, rinse, repeat, right? So based on that, I was giving my employer a good solid 3 hours of work a day, right? So that means that 21 hours of the day were devoted to getting drunk, recovering, either sleeping or eating lunch or whatever, from drinking or thinking about drinking, right? So, hey, can you meet me at this meeting tonight? I don't know. I'm a little busy. I would spend 21 hours a day consumed in some sort of alcoholic activity or recovering from it. We just want you to show up and maybe work with a couple people and go to a couple meetings. What Alcoholics Anonymous asked of you was pretty small compared to what you were doing when you were out there. You look at your own experience, create your own timeline. If you were a guy like Tarek that go on runs for a week or longer, like, your percentages are way fucked up, right? So spend some time talking on the phone with some people or meet with some sponsees. Come on, seriously? Well, maybe you don't want to explore this thing because, like, that God thing is a problem for you, right? I'll just go to Bob. If you think you are an atheist, an agnostic, a skeptic, or have some other, or have any other form of intellectual pride, which keeps you from accepting what is in this book, I feel sorry for you. If you still think that you are strong enough to beat the game alone, that is your affair. But if you really and truly want to quit drinking and using for good and all, kind of sounds like forever, and sincerely feel that you must have some help, we know that we have an answer for you. It never fails. If you go about it with one half the zeal you went about when you were showing when you were trying to get another drink. We're not even really asking for a half. Just a couple hours, right? Wake up, spend a couple hours with God in the morning, right? Any of you ever been in a relationship in here? Okay. So, if you devote 10 minutes to that relationship every day, what's going to happen to the relationship? It's probably not going to be a relationship, right? But yet, like, I'm too busy to get up in the morning and spend 10 minutes or 15 or 20 or 30 with this power that's only created everything because I'm a little busy. Got a lot going on over here. Right? But let's say spend 30 minutes. Just start there, right? Spend 30 minutes with this thing. Try to stay focused and present in the 10th step as you walk around and experience the rest of reality for a little bit. And then maybe attend a couple meetings and have some conversations with people over the course of the day. And maybe take this thing that you are the only person on the planet that can communicate your experience to somebody, right? Like, I love it when people ask me, well, I don't know if I'm ready to sponsor. I ask them two questions. Do you have a book? Yes. Have you been through it? That's all one question. Yes. Okay. Do you have your experience as an alcoholic or an addict? Yes. Okay. You're set. That's all you need. Start there. Are you going to know how to take somebody through every part of the book? Probably not, because as I've observed, the guys that are sitting across from me as I'm taking them through the book, is they're not taking very good notes because they're still a little water-headed from all the stuff that they've been doing, right? But here's what's cool, is that I have a phone that I answer pretty much unless I'm in the middle of a workshop, and they can ask questions and say, so when we did this, what did we do? And I can help them through that. And then they can take better notes this time. And then they can take another person through it and they improve their notes. And then over time, they start to perfect their craft. And they start to have stories that they come out of their own experience that they share at this step and at this point and how this works. And they explore a little more of the history and they explore these things. And all of a sudden, then they start having people that are staying sober as a result of working the steps with them. And it grows. And it grows. And it grows. You want to change the world? Get sober. You want to change the world in an exponential fashion? Help other people get sober. And if we really believe this thing, what goes around comes around, karma and all that other stuff, the more that I put into the universe to expand the universe, the more the universe comes back to me in different ways. The more money that I pay back, the more money flows in. The more good that I can create, the more good that comes in. And this thing just takes off, and then you get to watch, and you get to experience a reality that, unfortunately, most people don't. And you get to listen to 10-step calls of people that are calling you, struggling with things, and you start to think, God, and I thought my problems were big. But you realize that you're just this thing that's in this thing that's experiencing this thing. And you get to explore, and you get to seek, and you get to have this wonderful thing where you... Guys, this one's been fun. You are by far the best-looking group of people that we have presented to. We usually present to mostly dudes, so it didn't take a whole lot to beat it. But you've been a great-looking group to look at, right? You've at least tricked me into thinking you were attentive at multiple points, and I appreciate that. I can be delusional about it, but it seemed like you were paying attention. And you laughed at some of my bad jokes. And it's fun to come and participate in things where you get to experience these things and you get to see people that are excited about it, and then it grows and then it moves and then it's... Yeah, I experienced something that was very, very strange to me this weekend. Kind of makes me wonder if I have gone a little bit kooky. There are three guys that attended this weekend that I have talked to on the phone, some of them multiple times, some of them for about 4 years. Mm-hmm. And three of these guys, I swear to you, I've met them. I knew what they looked like. I experienced them. And when they introduced myself, I was like, yeah, I know who you are. But what they reported to me is that we've actually not physically met before. But it may just be that I've been so part of their life, either directly or indirectly or on a peripheral, that I feel like I know them. And I mean, I've been talking to this one dude for 4 years and never met him. I don't know what other place you can go to on the planet where you get that experience. To the point where I was actually arguing with him, are you sure we've not met? Because I think we have. Guys, it's so fun. The first thing is you got to stick around. Second thing is you got to do some shit. Third thing is you got to help some other people. And that allows you to reinforce your base to stick around. It's really cool. Appreciate you guys showing up.